This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. This is The Morning Run, Julian, Shaoning and Charts with you. And several banks have come under fire for charging fees when customers make a loan repayment or credit card repayment in cash or checks. The offending fees are 2 ringgit per transaction for paying your credit card loans, either with cash or check, and 50 cents for paying your credit card. Sorry, earlier on was loan repayments, and this is a loan and credit card bill using cash or checks for 50 cents.
Yeah, and this payment has to be mostly done over the counter back. So some of the banks that has that are charging these fees at the moment, we're looking at FM Bank, CIMB Bank, Public Bank, Standard Chartered, MBank and MiBank have told customers that they will start charging these fees beginning October 1st. However, MiBank appears to have removed the announcement from this from their website. MBank has also taken down the statement on its website, explaining the reason for the fees.
Now, the rationale for this, according to the Association of Banks in Malaysia, is that the fees are to encourage customers to move from cash to electronic payments. It also said that senior citizens and disabled will not be charged the fees. But of course, consumer groups argue that this practice is unfair to those who do not do their banking via digital channels.
Yeah, that's right. The CEO of FOMCA, or the Federation of Malaysian Consumers Association, Dato' Paul Selvaraj, said that banks should not penalise customers who don't know how to perform internet banking. And also Jay Solomon of NUB, which is the National Union of Banking Employees, says that banks have shifted from being a service-based industry to a fee-based one.
Yeah, so he pointed out, more on Jay Solomon, he pointed out that this fees, people have to fork out extra to pay their loan installment and credit card bills, which is done over the counter. Now, he also added that this is also perhaps a way for banks to eventually reduce their workforce.
Well, the argument is that with more automation, you need less manpower, right? And hence, you don't need to hire as many people as you used to. And perhaps with a natural attrition, your staff numbers will actually reduce. But just to clarify, this is if you pay for your loans or your credit cards either via cash or check, right? So there is a fee towards it. The question is this unfair? Because if you, for some people, whether it is because they are not comfortable with internet banking, they don't trust it, they don't know how to do it, it's something strange, all these charges can add up throughout a year. If, let's say, you continue to use checks, right, and you, let's say, you issue 5 checks a month, and then over a year, it's like 60 ringgit.
However, the printing of checks as well has its costs that are going to be borne either by the banks or by society. And that is why this is part of Bank Negara's great big push to go cashless. Even printing notes and coins, that has a cost as well, not to mention all the processes of handling, putting away and receiving and putting away those notes and coins. But a lot of people still like using cash for privacy reasons, whether that privacy means I don't want to be tracked by banks or the government, or I want to hide my income. I don't want to pay taxes. So there is a corruption. I remember Modi, Narendra Modi in India, took away the cash denominations, the big ones, right? To, I think, under the guise of avoiding corruption, but that turned out to be a disaster because a lot of the lower income group didn't get paid.
Yes, yeah. And I mean, it's also the reason why, if you look at China, right, they are so keen on cashless transactions, why Alipay, takes off in such a big way, and the government actually encourages it, because you can monitor every transaction, you know where the money is coming from and where is it going to. But this is in Malaysia, it's against a backdrop, and I can see some resistance coming, because if you look at the profit margins of banks, it's all above 40% in Malaysia. There's no
huge profits.
It's huge profits. So if you're a consumer, you think, why should I add to this? Even though, maybe there is a cost for banks to actually handle cash and checks, and there is a cost to our central bank too. But with 40% margins, can't they well absorb this 50 cents or 2 ringgit each time I make a transaction? And, are we marginalizing some segments of society as a result of this?
All right. There is, however, this new avenue for you to put your cash. And for that reason, we're running this poll. Would you participate in P2P crowdfunding? Tell us your reasons. And right at this point in time, we have about just slightly under 100 people voting. More than one third, yes, they would go for P2P crowdfunding. And almost a similar number wouldn't go for P2P crowdfunding. And the reason why we are covering this is that SC has issued license to the first property crowdfunding, which is really kind of P2P funding for the property sector.
Yeah, and this is an initiative that was announced back in the budget 2019. So look at back in May, according to NSC, industry specialists said that property crowdfunding may actually work. And they say that the recent experiment that has shown progress in certain areas in Klang Valley, the time was ripe for the alternative solution by the private sector and sort of to move away from the straitjacket textbook guideline of bank conventional financing.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, this is an alternative financing avenue for first-time house buyers, right, through a property crowdfunding scheme. Now, the SC said that property crowdfunding offers the same potential as that of equity crowdfunding and peer-to-peer financing platforms in that it provides an alternative source, like I mentioned, and is specifically tailored for first-time home buyers. At the same time, for those who provide the capital, it's a new investment option for them.
It's a new asset class, basically. You have the P2P lenders at this point in time, and if you're willing to take up some risk and have some diversification in your P2P portfolio, you can actually earn interest rates of 12%, 15%, that kind of thing. Although you got to be really careful of default rates. These are really highly risky borrowers. But the role of the SC is, of course, to enhance the capital market, i.e. Provide funding to people who need it, as well as providing investment options to people. But then if you look at whether this would solve the housing problem in Malaysia, I don't think it will. Even though funding does in some way help people buying houses, right? But I don't think it solves the housing problem in Malaysia, because the problem with property in Malaysia is that it's too expensive.
And added with the higher interest rate than conventional banking has to offer, again, that could add up to whether or not this could actually work in that sense.
It's not necessarily a higher interest rate, although that it could translate to that, because if you compare this with the original Fund My Home scheme, previously it was just the lenders were just institutions, right? Other banks or property developers. Now it's open to public. It's a deal that's structured where it protects the downside and lets them get most of the upside, up to 20%. But the benefit to the buyer is that once you pay the 20% down payment, you can move in the next day without paying anything else for 5 years. So there is that free rental element for the buyer. But my question is then, if the buyer can afford to pay 20% down payment, why then wouldn't they go with the conventional loans?
Yeah, where usually the rate is much lower, right, versus the P2P funding. Because admittedly, what happens in P2P is like you and I can be lenders, we can be mini banks. And we would want more return for this kind of risk exposure. So I would imagine the rates at P2P would be higher. So if you can afford a normal, or you qualify for a normal housing loan and it's lower, why would you take up this P2P? Unless, for whatever reason, your household is already over leveraged, or you don't have, for example, the required documentation to get a bank loan in the first place.
You're buying time. Basically, if you don't qualify for a bank loan, you have 5 years of grace to get the required financing. But here's the catch, right? When you put the 20% down payment, if your home, the underlying, this is an option, basically. This is a derivative and an option, right? So if your house price goes up within that 5 years, let's say to 20%, if you want to buy over that house, you've got to cough up extra 20% capital, all right, to buy over. If you don't buy over the house, then the lenders take that gain, that 20% gain. You can only share if the gains go beyond 20%. So it's very complicated for one, and that might be an impediment to solving the problem of housing affordability in Malaysia. You really got to read the fine print.
Yeah, especially for first-time home buyers, right, which you imagine this would be the... It's complicated in itself. I cannot imagine reading through the fine print to understand the scheme. So there are some risks involved.
Yeah, but I'm also thinking about what the bank, regulations, Bank Negara, for an example, they set up due diligence to sort of protect, things like risky borrowers in that sense. And I don't know whether or not same regulation is going to apply under this scheme.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.